thank you for listening to an InsideCollegeHockey.com podcast recorded Wednesday, December 10th, 2008. My name is Joe Vladishevsky, and we are pleased to be joined tonight by Inch editor and columnist Mike Eidelbiss. Hello, Mike.
Good evening, or good day, whatever, I guess.
Whenever you're listening.
Whenever you're listening. Good day part.
Yes. And also joined by Inch senior writer covering the WCHA, Jess Myers. Hello, Jess.
Hi, guys. If I don't want to specify a time of day, can I just say good?
Yes.
Okay, good.
It is permitted.
All right.
Speaking of good, things are going awfully good for a handful of college hockey teams right now. Most notably Notre Dame, who has risen to the top of the national polls and is 10-0-2 in their last 12 games, a fact that Miami fans conveniently like to forget. But let's talk about the Irish and a team that at this time last year we said, nice job, but they're probably a year away. They've ended up making the national championship game, and if this is the year for this team, they're certainly proving it, at least right now.
Yeah, there's no question about it, and I think that one thing that you're really seeing happening with Notre Dame is they've become a team that can beat you in so many ways. I mean, they've got the goaltending with Jordan Pearce, who, you know, obviously last year at this time was still a little bit of an unknown commodity, but he's proven that he's, you know, certainly a capable goaltender and, you know, one that every so often can steal a game for you. You know, not that he really has to be that guy that has to stand on his head night in and night out. There's certainly a very capable defensive team, you know, and that's more or less a hallmark of a Jeff Jackson-coached squad. But they're also becoming a very dangerous offensive team, too, and it's not, and it's really spread around to, you know, where they're to the, Notre Dame is to the point where really they have three lines that can really hurt you. You know, the emergence of Cali Ritterwall and Billy Mayday as line mates. That's something that Jeff Jackson predicted last year at the Frozen Four. We're seeing that now, and obviously Eric Condra, D. Thang, those guys, Christian Hansen, Garrett Regan. This is a team that can beat you in many ways, and you know they're going to be dangerous from here on out. I think that last year obviously was no fluke, as we're seeing now.
I think their overall depth in a lot of the players you just mentioned is certainly their strongest quality. You know, a lot of very good teams in college hockey can take away a top line or limit them, unless that line has Nathan Gerby on it. But, you know, Notre Dame, you got to pick your spots and you got to pick your poison, and they're just going to keep coming. Shift after shift, and that's a tough thing to go up against. It's a lot of their opponents are finding out. But while we're on the CCHA, let's talk about two other schools.
Can I just add, Gladdy? I wanted to say this, and we are on the CCHA. Yeah, the College Hockey Showcase was a couple weeks ago, which for us in the WCHA was, you know, kind of a rare opportunity to not only see Michigan and Michigan State, but talk to some of our friends from Ann Arbor and East Lansing and just kind of about the general state of the CCHA. When people talk about Notre Dame, what really has come to amuse me, you know, 5 years ago Notre Dame was just kind of an afterthought. They were an occasionally good team who had never done anything consistently. Now not only are they a good team and they've won a CCHA title and they've been to the Frozen Four and to the national championship game, but it seems like people I know in the CCHA talk about Notre Dame with this kind of impending sense of dread that, you know, and the comment I heard from a friend of mine, I can't remember which school it was from, but they were, you know, you keep hearing about, boy, if and when they get this new rink built, how will anyone stop them? You know, it's kind of like this working death to the rest of college hockey. I mean, not only are they good now, but there's so much promise for the future. I think it's amazing to see how just the psyche about how other teams feel about Notre Dame has changed, and how quickly and how dramatically it's changed.
That is a good point. That is a good point.
Well, I had heard from, this is obviously an aside, but I had heard from at least, you know, one source that, you know, after the Notre Dame football team lost to Southern Cal and there was all the speculation about Charlie Weiss's future as the head coach, and the AD, the new AD, couldn't meet with him, you know, for a few days because he was out fundraising in California. I had heard that what he was actually fundraising for was the rest of the money to build the rink. So, you know, the times, I guess, have changed a little bit at Notre Dame, where the football coach's future has to be put on the back burner so the guy can go and fundraise for a hockey rink. You know, just the depth that that Notre Dame has, you know, they're talented, obviously, talented offensively, and we didn't even talk about the guys that they have on defense. You know, you've got Ian Cole and Teddy Ruth and Kyle Lawson and Blatchford.
Blatchford has 14 assists.
Exactly, and he's, you know, kind of an afterthought, really.
Yeah.
When it comes to to their defense, I mean, he's... You know, I like to call him a poor man's John Michael Lyles. He's kind of got that same skill set. Maybe not the greatest in his own end, but certainly can move the puck and, you know, has a real knack in the offensive end. So, you know, there's really no chinks in this team's armor right now. You know, that can change with injuries and, you know, maybe somebody will figure out a way to expose them. But as of right now... I really can't see any holes.
Well, let's get to Miami then. They've won six in a row, certainly among the hottest teams in the nation and the CCHA, and they'll be quick to remind you, Miami fans, that they swept Notre Dame several weeks back. So this is a team that thinks it has a shot, certainly in the conference level and at the national level. I got to see them for the first time last weekend on TV, on ESPNU, and certainly Western Michigan this season hasn't offered much of a measuring stick to a lot of their opponents, but Miami ran over them pretty good on a Sunday afternoon on the road. And this is another team that has some depth, but their big guns kind of lead the way, and it starts with Carter Camper.
Yeah, he's a heck of a player. And as you alluded to, you know, they really kind of go as their offense goes, you know, they've got two freshman goalies, both of whom have you know, played fairly well over the first half of the season, Knapp and Reichert. But you know, I think there is some hesitation, at least in my mind, when you've got two rookie goalies, you know, how are they going to perform later in the season as the games get bigger down the stretch and we get into tournaments in the conference? You know, they're not quite Miami's not quite as strong on the blue line, I think, as they've been in past years. Obviously, you don't lose a guy like Alec Martinez and just pluck another one out of juniors. But I think that they, you know, they, and this might be an odd thing to say, considering that they had Nathan Davis last year and they had Ryan Jones, you know, both incredibly talented players on offensively. But I think they might be a little bit more dangerous this year, just because they've got a number of guys who can really score. You know, you look at Mealy and Wingles and Camper and those guys, you know, they're you know, I think they're a little bit more balanced maybe than they have been in years past.
Yeah, that's a good thing about Miami. And, you know, they say down the stretch in the playoffs is when you find out about your team's defense and goaltending. So with Miami, having not been through that before, that question mark will linger well into the spring. So we'll see how that plays out. Of course, Miami in first place right now, 23 conference points. Notre Dame in second with 20, but has played two fewer games. The third-place team in the CCHA is the Alaska Nanooks, and this is a team that has surprised probably some, but if you look at what they've done and what they've got left, especially against a conference, CCHA, that I think is safe to say top-heavy with Miami, Notre Dame, and possibly Michigan. After that, you know, there's kind of some okay teams to choose from, but nothing that's really going to knock your socks off. Alaska has a chance, certainly, to earn a top-8 spot in a home-ice playoff series, but also to earn a top-4 spot and to host that second weekend against a team that would advance out of the, first round of the CCHA playoffs. You know, they kind of control their driver's seat to earn that spot and possibly be able to play at home for a trip to the Joe Louis Arena for the CCHAs, which is a major, major deal. They're 3-0-3 in their last six games, all in the league. Had won three in a row before three straight ties. And listen to this. They've got 8 weekends left in their conference season and this weekend off. But the only really, really tough weekend that you would point to on the schedule is January 9th and 10th. They're at Notre Dame. They don't have Miami again this year. They don't have Michigan again this year. They've got 4 with last place Western Michigan. They've got Nebraska, Omaha, Ohio State, and Ferris State. Those are 3 of those teams they'll be battling with for maybe that 4th spot or 3rd. Those are all at home. And then they've got road trips to Michigan State, Northern Michigan, and I mentioned Western Michigan already. So this is a team that can really rack up some points here in the second half if they can stay consistent and at least win the games or get points. You know, CCHA, you can get that point for the shootout loss. Right.
That's right.
They give you the ties.
Do they? They well, play now. They play Notre Dame at Notre Dame, right?
Yeah, and then
correct.
You know, they always do that. Alaska always does that that 4-game road trip when they're off of school there in early January.
Michigan State, Notre Dame.
So they come down for a couple weeks. You know, but one thing that. You know, and this is kind of a, I guess this is probably true for every hockey team, but more so for the Alaskas just because of the travel schedule that these guys have and the long road trips that they make. You know, you kind of always hear that, you know, if they can take care of their business at home and split on the road, then, you know, they're going to be in pretty good shape. And, you know, Alaska's managed to do that so far this year. I mean, they split at home with Michigan. They split at Miami. They had a couple ties, I think, the last time, last weekend against at Nebraska, Omaha.
Swept Ferris.
So, you know, as of right now, they're pretty much playing by the blueprint, which is, you know, take care of your business at home and you know, keep splitting on the road. And they're going to be in good shape. And, you know, you mentioned their road trips, and outside of Notre Dame, I mean, Michigan State is certainly beatable at home and on the road and in neutral sites, as we've seen. Can't really think of any other places. I can't really think of any other places for them to play. Yeah, on the deck of an aircraft carrier.
Tug of war, spelling contest.
Yeah. Northern Michigan, obviously. They're a bit of a Jekyll and Hyde team. And Western, which is, if I'm remembering off the top of my head, in the basement in the CCHA, and I think Michigan State is actually 11th, and Northern might be 10th as of right now. So, you know, things are really lining up nicely for Alaska. It's just that traditionally that four-game road trip that they take when they're on the road for, you know, virtually 10 days to come to the lower 48 has been a killer for them. So for them to get somehow manage 4 points out of that, out of those four games, I think goes a long way.
Well, the good part about that for Alaska this year is the first two are at Michigan State.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like they got to go to Notre Dame first and then fight back the second weekend. They can, I mean, get into Munn, and by then nobody. Those games are January 2nd and 3rd, so these Spartan sports fans' allegiance will be firmly focused on Orlando, Florida that weekend with football. So, you know, maybe they get in there and get a couple points, get a couple wins even, and then go to Notre Dame and see how they match up against a team that's currently number one in the nation. If you want a cause for concern about Alaska, it's this. They've only scored 34 goals in 16 games this year. So that's just a tick over 2 goals per. But Alaska and Cornell will tell you, it doesn't matter when you've only allowed 20 total goals against in 16 games for Alaska. Chad Johnson has been the goalie for for Alaska.
I hope he wears number 85.
He's number 30.
Nah. He has no sense of humor.
No, he does not. He does not. 949 save percentage, 1.4 goals against average. The backup goalie, Scott Greenham, has 2 shutouts and 2 starts and can't crack the number one job. So
picks his spots well, I guess.
Yeah, well, I think it says a lot about what Alaska's doing defensively. So good for them, and they'll be a team to watch certainly in the second half.
Well,
also to me,
the other thing. I was gonna say just one more quick comment about Alaska, and I know we get emails from time to time from Alaska fans. You know, they're a pretty vocal group actually, and I think we'd be remiss not to just at least mention the job that Dallas Ferguson has done coaching up there. You know, obviously they've been in a little bit of turmoil as far as coaching over the last few years. First, Tavis McMillan was there and then left. Then Doc Del Castillo came in for 1 year. And without knowing the details of what went on there, just it sounded like a pretty tumultuous year. But, you know, obviously judging from you know, the results that we've seen so far, that these guys have bought into Dallas Ferguson and his system. Obviously, he was an assistant coach there previously, so they were familiar with him. And, you know, having that stability obviously has been key for those guys this year. And he's, you know, he's done a great job. And obviously, he's got to be a front runner for CCHA Coach of the Year. And I think even nationally, if they can continue to play this way, he's going to be up for some awards.
That is certainly true. The last point I wanted to make is that it just seems to me that points are a little harder to get in late January and early February. I call those kind of the college hockey dog days, when you're still a few weeks out from playoffs, the weather's crappy, you know, you're getting back into classes, you've seen the same teams now a few times when you make the circuit around the league. So how Alaska handles that, I think, is another thing that will be worth monitoring. So that'll do it for our CCHA banter. Don't say we don't love you, because we do. And we will now.
I'll say I like them a lot. I'm not ready to make the love commitment.
Oh, it's holidays, Jess.
I like some of them. Others are proving not very likable at this point.
I love Illinois, Chicago. Does that still count? No.
Kent.
Kent. I heart Kent.
don't mess with the National Guard. I'm just saying.
Oh, man.
All right. Wisconsin has won five in a row and has moved up to the top of the WCHA standings, even though they've played six more games than everyone else in the league.
they're actually, I think, done with their WCHA schedule now.
They started in early August.
Yeah.
No.
They're hosting four Badger Classics.
Yeah, that's right. 9-1-1 in their last 11 after starting out 0-6-1. Bob Motzko at St. Cloud State likes to say that his team is like a yo-yo. I think that Mike Eaves may have cornered the yo-yo market, at least the way things are looking right now. And the thing I love, too, about the Badgers' schedule, they're off now for like a month and a half or something like that. I mean, they're pretty much just done for a while.
Yeah.
But, hey, good for them. I was, like many people, ready to pretty much write them off as a lost cause this year. And the way they've turned things around, now four in a row at home they've won, and they've got four more home games coming up before they venture out on the road again. So this could be a team, the way they're playing, that could be well above 500, not just two games above 500 by the time middle of January rolls around. I'm just frankly amazed that they're a factor in the WCHA race as quickly as they are from where they were.
They've got Alabama, Huntsville, Lake Superior State, and Harvard coming to town for the holiday tournament, and then Northern Michigan. So four non-leaguers at home coming up.
Yep.
In fact,
yeah. And Harvard, I've heard, if you can score nine or more, you're in pretty good shape with Harvard.
Yeah, I think.
In fact, one more note about Wisconsin, and I'm going off looking at their schedule. This is probably 2 weeks ago. I think they only have six road games the rest of the year.
That is true.
And they play at Minnesota, I know that.
Minnesota, Mankato, and Anchorage. That's it.
I saw them a couple weeks ago. They beat St. Cloud 1-0. Shane Connolly got the shutout, and it was a big night for him because he had given up six goals the night before. It looked like, you know, the cliche coaching move is to put the other guy in the next night after your starter gives up six goals. Eves had the confidence to come back with Connolly, and you know, kind of, I think that meant a lot to Connolly that his coach would bring him back the next night. He gets a shutout. At the time, they were 5-7-2, and, you know, we're done with that stretch where they played, you know, pretty much the first month or month and a half of their schedule on the road. And Eves said that night that, you know, the fact that they had kind of survived that stretch, hadn't done great, but were just a couple games under 500, and now had all these home games coming up, he said, you know, you may look back at this as the turning point of our season, that we were able to, you know, not thrive, but at least survive and get through that stretch and now get a chance to come home and make some waves.
And that started a five-game winning streak, so good for him. But I want to take it back to something you said, because, Jess, when you said, I'm surprised that to see Wisconsin where they are right now and how quickly they've turned it around, back in October, you know, when they had lost to BC and UNH and Denver and Minnesota and North Dakota, you know, we were kind of saying, how can this team be giving up so many goals? How can this team not have won at least one or two of these games? And I think we got the answer, you know. They just... They just kind of got it together, and that to me is what's remarkable about Wisconsin's turnaround this season.
Well, you think
those teams too. I mean,
yeah.
Man, they're good teams. They lost to.
Well, yeah, there's no question. I mean, I guess I don't know how to explain it, and ask the question. I've only seen them. I shouldn't say I've only seen them. I've probably seen Wisconsin play now three or four times on TV. I mean, is it a case of, you know, do they have so much talent that it's just taken guys, you know, I think about them especially on defense. I mean, you're talking about guys who, you know, from where they came from, they were all the number one defensemen. They were all, you know, playing point on the first power play, getting the big minutes. I mean, do you think it's a case of where there's so much talent back there that it just takes them, or it's taking them a little longer to kind of figure out their roles and kind of determine how they fit in the grand scheme of things?
Could be.
Before I saw them play, and going, you know, reading the box scores and talking to people and just kind of speculating, you got the feeling that all of that defensive talent was either trying to do or kind of being forced to do too much, to try to do too much. You know, their goaltending situation wasn't great. There hadn't been anybody really stepping up on offense. And, I mean, you talk to Jamie McBain now, who is, you know, their junior defenseman, their leading scorer, and in my mind, their best player. And you ask him about the turnaround, and he said the key is that the defensemen are being allowed to be defensemen now, that they're not being asked to play every role. He leads the team with 3 goals and 16 assists, which is just outstanding. And granted, the top 2 scorers are defensemen, but beyond that, you've got guys like Blake Jeffrion and Tom Gorofsky and Derek Stepan who are you know, bringing their games up a little bit and providing some offense. And Connolly, I don't ever see becoming an elite goalie, but I do think he's going to be good enough or has been good enough with the defensemen doing what they can do with the talent they have.
Yeah, and I don't think he's a guy that has to be an elite goalie for them to win. If they want to win a national title or get to the Frozen Four level, well, that might be a little bit different. But, you know, he doesn't have to be, I don't think, elite. He just has to, you know, basically just has to stop the ones that get through to him. You know, he just has to be good. He has to basically be the Craig Krenzel of goalies. You know, just manage it. Just manage the game.
Big Ten football reference.
That was the mistake I made when I played goalie, is I stopped all the ones that didn't get through to me. But the ones that did, that's when I really had trouble.
No, fought the puck a little bit there.
I think Harvard's auditioning. Do you have any eligibility remaining?
No, not Harvard eligibility.
Maybe you can cover punts for Minnesota Duluth again. They're still playing football.
National championship game, baby.
When is that?
That's on Saturday.
What's
Florence, Alabama. You'll be there, won't you?
What television network might
it be? It's on the Worldwide Leader.
I think I saw Florence, Alabama once at Mettler's. I don't know. Are they the same?
And they have just been a pseudonym.
Sounds like I think Florence, Alabama was a Red Hot Chili Peppers song.
Was that one person or two, Buck? One was Florence?
No, there's the same one.
All right.
Anyways,
all right.
Who do they play? Who do the Bulldogs play?
The Bulldogs play Northwest Missouri State.
Oh, they got two directions and a state on their name.
I believe Northwest Missouri State is something like 0-3 in the last 3 Division II national title games. So they are trying to become the Buffalo Bills of D2 football.
Did they know that Duluth is the Buffalo Bills of D1 hockey?
Wow.
They never won 4 straight national championships.
No.
No, but with all the overtimes, it ended up being 4 games.
Yeah, it did seem like about 4 games there.
Yeah. Daryl Talley will be a guest of
He had a fine jerry curl.
Okay. You know what? Let's talk a little bit. Buffalo's neighboring city to the south, about an hour drive, I'd say, is Erie, Pennsylvania. Home of the...
Are you just speculating on that, or...
the drive?
Yeah.
I don't carry a stopwatch when I make the trip.
Those... Bus, congratulations, those classes in segwaying that we paid for are really paying off.
Yeah, I guess
so. How about that one, man?
That was smooth.
Cutting off my flow. My chi.
So...
It's the home of the Mercyhurst Lakers, who are 6-0-1 in their last seven games, the second-best unbeaten streak in the country behind Notre Dame. And, you know, they ran over AIC last weekend. Matt Pierce was the inch player of the week. And this team is scoring a ton of goals. They're kind of the anti-Alaska. They've got 60 goals, or 61 goals in their 16 games, whereas Alaska had just 34. But they've allowed 60, whereas Alaska allowed just 20. So you got a Mercyhurst team that's pretty hot right now and, you know, can make that move up into that second or third place position in Atlantic Hockey. Certainly it's Air Force all the way. They've got an 11-point lead in the standings right now. But this is a team that's getting hot and scoring a ton of goals. So kudos to Mercyhurst. Obviously beat Princeton at the RPI Holiday Tournament during this unbeaten streak. And Rick Kotkin and his guys seem to be a confident bunch, and they'll be worth watching in the next couple weeks here. So, good for the Lakers.
Certainly, and so, I know that they got, and, you know, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I know that early on in the season in some of those non-conference games, I think they were actually at St. Cloud to start. And
they gave up 14
they got
the first weekend.
Throttled pretty bad.
7-2, 7-3.
But their goaltending has settled in.
Ryan Zapolsky.
Yeah, they had the Lundin kid, right? The kid that was at Maine.
Yeah, Matt Lundin.
Matt Lundin. I was going to say Mike, but that's his brother. Matt Lundin was kind of their, you know, their guy to start with, and wasn't playing very well, and they, you know, went to Zapolsky, who's the freshman, I believe. And
he's a sophomore.
And he's settled in nicely for him, and they're scoring.
How are these numbers? 6 starts, 5-0-1. 941.220. Not bad.
And I know there was a point where the Mercyhurst was giving up about 5 goals a game. So
they had a pretty rough bigger goal of it for a little time there. So
Rick Kotkin had one of my favorite post game quotes that I've ever heard after an NCAA regional game at Mariucci Arena in 2003. They got just run by the Gophers. That was en route to a Gopher National Championship, you know, in Mariucci. Somebody asked him, at what point did you know your team was in trouble? And he said, I tried to call a timeout during warm-ups, but the ref wouldn't allow it.
Rick Kotkin is certainly one of the great personalities in the game. He's always got a gem ready to roll off his tongue. Mercyhurst at RIT for 2 this weekend. That's a good little series.
Important, too.
Yeah, good games.
RIT's just came off a...
They beat Air Force.
Yep, nice win at Air Force in overtime.
Yep. I might go to that Saturday night.
Yeah, that wouldn't be a bad one.
May consider that. We'll see. And then I've got an afternoon hockey engagement to attend. So
on Saturday?
Yeah, a little Lakers and Hobart Division III action, 4 p.m. face-off.
Oh, there you go.
So, you know, mosey over to Rochester after leaving Geneva.
Yep.
We'll see what happens.
Nothing bad ever happens in Rochester.
Mercyhurst has a nice stretch coming up in January and February, too. They've got 8 conference home games in a row.
Yeah, I remember they were really on the road a lot early, too.
Yeah. Well, in fact, they're in a stretch right now where they're playing 1 home game between November 22nd and January 16th. But then after that, 8 in a row at home.
Good. Good for the Lakers.
Including a pair with Air Force, which could be
might be
meaningful.
Watching. What are the dates of that, Jess?
January 30th and 31st.
Nice.
Has Air Force jumped the shark, by the way? Man, lost 2 out of 3 there.
Glass is half full. They've lost 2 out of 3.
Yeah.
Sorry, glasses half empty. They've lost two or three. Glasses half full. They've won 14 of 16.
Yeah, well, there's that.
Hey, you're only as good as your last game.
You might want to widen the zoom. You might want to widen the lens a little bit.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's a pretty interesting conference, though.
Yeah, you know what? I kind of mentioned this on the last podcast, and again, talking to some folks around ECAC land, you know, during the Thanksgiving weekend, Atlantic Hockey got some non-conference wins. Certainly Mercyhurst won in the RPI tournament. Canisius got a win and a tie-up at Clarkson, and, you know, Air Force beat CC, and people were like, oh, you know, what a bad weekend for the ECAC. And I was like, I don't know. I mean, there's not a huge gap. You know, it's dwindling. Even from, you know, the top 10 teams in the country to Atlantic Hockey, let alone, you know, a Clarkson team that's going to struggle to finish in the top half of ECAC, you know, or RPI. I don't know. I just think that whole conference has elevated its level of play, and kudos to them.
Yeah, I would agree, and I think that, you know, obviously you talk about Air Force, and, you know, they're as good as anybody. RIT has proven to be a pretty good team since they've elevated themselves to the Division I ranks. Mercyhurst, obviously, we've been talking about them for a little bit. You know, they can play with anybody. You know, right now when they're getting some goaltending and scoring goals, the team that I've kind of been keeping an eye on a little bit is Canisius. They were in a rebuilding mode there for a while, and it seems like some of that rebuilding is finally coming to fruition because they've been a pretty good team here through the first half of the year.
And it's gotten to the point now where Atlantic Hockey teams where you're almost not surprised to see it, or it's less surprising when, you know, Air Force beats Colorado College and Mercyhurst beats Princeton. I mean, last year RIT beat Minnesota and Cornell both. So these teams are getting these wins and showing that they're playing at a pretty high level.
Joe, we talked about Air Force a little bit. Just to do, in fairness to our armed forces, I think it behooves us to talk about Army for just a second. Now, we mentioned just a little bit ago long road trips, and I don't even think this qualifies as a road trip if you're Army. This is more of actually a deployment. They had a home game on November 8th, and their next home game is on January 9th. So that's a full 2 months that the Black Knights are going to be playing away from West Point. It amazes me looking at their numbers compared to last year. Now, last year the story was Josh Castle, who had something like 5 shutouts, and you just could not score on the guy last year. Here's a little bit of an indication about why things are going a little bit differently for Army so far this year. Castle and Jay Clark, who's a sophomore, have essentially split time. Castle's numbers this year, 861, 412, 2-6 record, no shutouts. So maybe as he goes, the Black Knights go. And that's what we're seeing in West Point. The other thing I want to see in West Point, if you watch the Army-Navy football game, the sweet helmets and pants that Army was wearing with the desert camo on them, we got to see a hockey sweater with that before the end of the season. So.
No.
Nope.
No, we don't. We can watch Padres Sunday games if you want to see that.
Okay. I liked it.
When Oregon,
I support the military.
Oregon gets a hockey team, then you can have that kind of junk.
Yeah.
Until then, we'll just...
I'm the guy that owns the big Bucky jersey, remember?
Speaking of Bucky,
I remember.
Was that... Yeah. That must have been during the college hockey showcase. They had a third jersey.
I heard about that. I didn't see it, though. What did they do?
It had some badger claw prints on it.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah, near the bottom of the... Near the bottom, the hem on the bottom, which was, you know, pretty 1998, if you ask me.
Yeah.
You know.
So is the entire state of Wisconsin.
Yeah, there's that.
Well, you Badger roller hockey?
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what it was.
All right.
But yeah, it was not good. I don't know. We need to reprise Jason Rohn's jersey rankings one of these days.
Yeah. Well, that ended up with Maine in first, right?
I believe it did.
I agree with that.
Yeah, I would too.
I'd concur with that.
Pretty
sweet-looking sweater.
Yeah. I was looking at some American Hockey League stuff today, and Springfield Falcons, affiliated with the Edmonton Oilers, have a really pretty good look, with one huge exception. The color scheme is similar to Maine's in light and dark blue, black and, I guess, Carolina blue logo on the front. Great font on the names and numbers on the sleeves and on the back. Great shoulder patches, the Oilers logo on the shoulder patches. And then, for no good reason whatsoever, underneath the striping on the elbow of the sleeve, the outside of the sleeve, like down above between the elbow and the glove, there is a little like bird claw.
Talons.
Talons, yes. Bird talons. The yellow, like, bird feet.
Yeah.
Sticking out on the sleeve for no reason whatsoever.
Not so good.
You take those off, you got one of the best sweaters in hockey. You leave them on, C+.
C+, yes.
The C is for corny. So anyway, good for the Falcons.
Yeah.
And we'll work our way and stay in the state of Massachusetts and talk about Boston University kind of getting the scalp over crosstown rival Boston College with a three-point weekend last weekend. Unfortunately, the Saturday game is still lingering on my digital recording mechanism. and I had
mechanism? What is it, a gear mechanism. Drive?
It's a thing that you program with your remote control and a
vacuum
records
a box that makes noises.
He's got you make it sound like it's the Univac sitting on top of your TV.
Well, I'm not going to get into branding.
All right, well.
So I tried to come up with an alternate way of
you can call it TiVo if it's TiVo.
It's not TiVo, it's DVR.
Oh.
So, there you go.
Yeah.
Now we've got that out of the way.
All right.
Now we've got that out of the way, we can talk about BU. I think this is a team that, you know, we said Notre Dame was a year away, maybe last year. I think BU is kind of going through that same thing this season. That they've got some depth, they got some impact freshmen, and finally this is starting to go their way. I've been critical of BU in the past. Long Frozen Four drought, and I kind of just always came back to the point: show me that you're relevant in college hockey again, and this year they are. So, thumbs up to BU, and we'll see how they can continue this success. I think in the last 3 to 4 years, that's been their problem. They've played great for 3 weeks and lousy for four, you know, and this team seems to have a little more stability, so that will be the challenge for BU. And Vermont is a team that's on a nice little roll, kind of outside of the national scope, I think, but they've won five in a row, got a win over the national development team under 18s, and actually some of the quotes from Coach Kevin Steddon after that exhibition game win were not very pleased with his team. So they'll get to regroup and get it going in time for the second half. They usually host a holiday tournament. I think they will again this year.
Yes, they do. They have. It's the first weekend of January. They've got Colgate, Ferris State, and St. Lawrence.
Old ECAC reunion.
There you go.
We'll get...
look at some old pictures and...
Yeah.
So on.
Well. St. Lawrence, Colgate, Vermont.
And Ferris.
Yep. And Ferris State Bulldogs.
For no apparent reason. Yeah.
And then after that, they've got...
just to round things up.
After that, they've got two at BC at home and two at Northeastern, so those will be big games.
Yeah.
For Vermont.
January
again, important month. Tough points.
I want to bring up a couple things about these two teams. First of all, Boston, you mentioned the feeling that they're, maybe they're a year away, but with a, with a guy like Colin Wilson on the roster.
For what? For this year only.
Yeah. You know, maybe this year has to be next year, if that makes any sense. You know, you're a year away.
Oh, yeah.
You can't think, you can't look at it that way. You know, and Matt Gilroy obviously is a huge part of that team. He's a senior, and they've got some other talented seniors on that roster. And granted, most of the top-end talent is younger, and, outside of Colin Wilson, those guys are going to stick around. But, obviously with him in the lineup, he really changes the dynamic of that team. He's the one... I would say the one player on that roster that can completely take charge of a game on his own. And then just touching on Vermont, Vermont was pretty good last year. Maybe pretty good is a little strong. They were above average. They were tough out. Let's put it that way. And they end up having a nice run. But they're getting some scoring this year, which is ironic considering they had. Joe Fallon in goal last year, but now for them to finally, they've got some scoring pop there, they're another team they're not going to go away, and a pretty veteran team too. They're gonna hang around.
You're saying about Vermont last year, they were one of those two or three teams, along with Harvard, along with Minnesota State, that were just outside.
Yep.
They were the first ones outside of the NCAA tournament field. And I think, I just got to imagine that makes your summer workouts a little more intense, easier to focus. And even at this time of the year when, oh, man, we didn't play well, we shouldn't have lost to so-and-so team. These games are the ones you can, every team that just misses the NCAAs can look back on two or three nights and say, if only we had gotten those points, or if only we hadn't blown that lead, then maybe we're playing in this national tournament. So Vermont has certainly not faced that this year. 9-3-2. Their only losses are to BC, BU, and Northeastern. So that's pretty good. And they got 3 points at Miami. Credit to them.
Joe, that was one of the great quotes I got in doing the A to Z profile this summer. Cale Mollerat from Minnesota State said essentially exactly that about, I said, what is just missing the NCAAs? How has that affected you? And he said, every day in the summer when you roll out of bed and you think, I've got to go work out today and you don't really want to, he said, you think there's a gopher or there's a badger heading for the weight room right now, so I got to get in there.
Yeah.
It's like, you talk about something, and this is, middle of July that I'm hearing this. It's amazing how that's got to stick in your head to be that close and fall just short.
Yeah. Vermont at St. Lawrence Saturday night. Maybe a preview of the potential Catamount Cup final. Put that on your schedule.
I think that was the network tease for that game.
Yeah. Let's talk about St. Lawrence a little bit. They've got to absolutely 100% be the best under 500 team in the country. They did a great job beating New Hampshire early in the season. Really, really controlled Friday night at Colgate. A good win for St. Lawrence without their best offensive player and a senior captain defenseman. And then played Cornell to a 1-0 at Lina, where the only goal against was a power play goal for the Big Red, and St. Lawrence dominated the third period of that game. And if not for a couple of ridiculous saves and gutty shot blocks from Cornell, St. Lawrence deserved at least a point out of it, didn't get it. But that's kind of what's been going on for this Saints team, and I'll have more on this in my notebook this week, but this is a good team with a lot of depth, high energy. You know, Joe Marsh-coached teams will not be outworked. And now they've got four senior defensemen on their blue line, which is a really nice thing to have. Brock McBride, to me, is their best offensive player. He's a little banged up and out of the lineup right now. But, you know, guys like Mike McKenzie are stepping up, Kevin DeVirgilio, a few others. So they've got some. They've got a really good batch of guys, and I think we'll end up in the top four of the ECAC standings. You've got Princeton and Cornell, far and away the class of the week, no question about that. But all the spots after that are wide open, and I think St. Lawrence is going to grab one of them. I really do.
Who's the fourth team in that mix?
You see, that's why you have to go ask me questions like that.
I mean, you could kind of throw teams in there and,
it
make,
might be
and
Dartmouth.
Make a case. That's how I'm kind of looking at this, is you kind of could throw teams in there and make a case, but then you can...
Yeah, they've all got pros and cons.
Yeah.
The one team that Dartmouth. I think their record is better than they are is probably Yale.
Yeah, I think so.
Three of their six wins are against Brown. So... but a lot of people like what's going on there, and they're a better team than they had been, you know, recently. So Yale's good. I don't know if they're top four good. Dartmouth is so young, but you know, they've got it going so far. Again, that's a team that has kind of gone in streaks and spurts as a habit for the last 3 to 4 years. So. Yeah, it'll be interesting, but I just think an awful lot of what's going on at St. Lawrence. Union's a team that can make a run at that top four. Harvard could. I mean, sometimes they look great, and sometimes they just look off.
And then sometimes they play North Dakota.
Yeah. So we'll see what we got. I mean, it'll be worth watching. A little bit to me, a little like Atlantic hockey. You know, there's enough depth in the league that teams can come up and beat you, but it's a league dominated by its top teams. I guess maybe more similar to the CCHA with the Miami and Notre Dame leading the way and the rest kind of falling in behind.
Yeah.
And that's what's going on in ECAC hockey. So
20 years from now, there'll be a bank manager somewhere saying, "Yeah, I was Harvard's third string goalie. I got to play 20 minutes against Brett Hextall one night." It's a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And somebody will be saying, "Who's Brett Hextall?"
And that someone is me right now. Just kidding.
Don't send emails. Speaking of Union, I want to mention they're in a nice little tournament, and their holiday tournament is a nice little affair.
They're at the Chicago tournament, right?
Yeah, the Shillelagh tournament, which was previously known as the...
Lightning College Classic?
Yeah, the Lightning College Classic, but then I guess Len Barry kicked it out of town with Barry Melrose. So it landed in suburban Chicago, actually Hoffman Estates, which is a northwestern suburb. And that's another one of those January 2nd and 3rd tournaments. And it's Notre Dame is taken over as the host. So it'll be UMass Lowell against Minnesota Duluth, and then Union Notre Dame. So those are four fairly good teams there for that tournament.
That's not so bad.
No.
Not so bad.
I never heard the resolution of it either, by the way, but Scott Sandlin told me that they were working on getting tickets for all four teams to go to the Wrigley Field game that weekend, too. So that would be a neat little treat for...
Oh, man, that would be great.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would be a little bonus. And if you're going to be in Chicago at that time of year, it makes a ton of sense to get those guys in, you know, have them standing at the Ivy or something and... Yeah. Watch a little outdoor hockey.
You know what they should do is let them practice out there.
That would be cool.
That would be even better. Be really you know what they should do is let them go down there on the 31st and say, see you at 6 a.m., boys.
Yeah. Yeah. Princeton's in the midst of an 8-game home stretch. They're not following the Army on Mercyhurst scheduling plan. So that's a team, very, very good team. Very good team.
They've got a game coming up against Mankato, I believe.
Yeah, they've got Minnesota State and Nebraska Omaha coming in. They're doing the travel partner thing with some Western teams, and then the Mavericks will also be playing at Yale. So they got the home and home travel partner thing going. that's a good thing. I never noticed that before. And this is my other brother, Daryl. So
we've got two sets of Huskies out here, Gladdy, too. I don't know if you caught that. But.
Oh, yeah, I know.
And we're trying to get another set of Seawolves, but we don't know where we can find any.
Maybe you guys can take in Yale.
Are there
Although
any?
There is. No, wait a minute. There's, like, UNC Greensboro or some, like, school like that is the Seawolves, believe it or not.
No, I think it's Stony. It's Stony Brook.
Or the Seahawks.
That's exactly what it is.
It's Stony Brook.
Okay. Okay, gotcha.
Yep.
What is
Save College Hockey America, Stony Brook. Save them.
Hartford's Wolfpack in the AHL.
Yep.
Yeah, American Hockey.
Which I believe is actually named after a submarine, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, good.
I don't know where I heard that. Anyway, that's neither here nor there.
There's a high school here in Minnesota named the Wolfpack. Of course, they used to be the Indians, but, you know, all those goofy non-plural names now. They used to, all of them used to have a Native American nickname.
They were here first.
They were here first, and they're still here and thriving, and God bless them.
How about the big game of the year, February 7th? In ECAC hockey, Princeton at Cornell. That's going to be a big one.
I'm going to put that on my calendar right now.
And the way this is going, we may not have a podcast before then, so we'll talk about it now. No.
What's fun? I mean, that's not funny.
That's the game of the year. That's the game
of the
year.
It's the game of the year. Cornell got the...
Oklahoma will still finish ahead of both of them, by the way.
Cornell won the first round. I mean, they got the win at Princeton in the season opener for those teams. So, good. Those 2 points are pretty big right now, especially the way those teams have rolled right through the first half of the league. So,
you know, the funny thing is that you know, that game is February 7th, but that's the next game for both teams because they take that long break for finals.
Yeah. Princeton's exam break is late January. So
I still can't get over that, but
well, Union has theirs around Thanksgiving. Princeton has theirs. Harvard has theirs right before Bean Pot. I mean, it just
no, but
how it goes.
Do you need 3 weeks?
No, you get 3 weeks.
No, oh, there you go.
Princeton's is only 2.
I didn't go to an Ivy League school, so.
Who are you to?
Who am I?
Challenge.
Who am I to challenge? I just went to some stupid school in Minnesota. We got a day.
It's not stupid.
We got a day to study for finals. Yeah. Drinking day.
I didn't even know they had those till like my first semester or second semester. I was like, reading days? What the hell are reading days?
Reading was in quotes.
Yeah. It was good. It was a good time. I actually went on vacation during one of those sessions. It's great. I had a weekend trip to Baltimore, to Pimlico.
Sorry. Charm City.
Yeah. To Pimlico, went to Camden Yards.
Did you do any reading?
Yeah, 11 and a half ounces at a time.
96 calories.
2.1 grams of carbs. I just made that up. I don't read that crap.
All right. That's
I read the drink specials on the bar, on the chalkboard.
Happy Hour. It's a nice little area there around the
inner harbor.
Harbor.
Yeah.
I was there for
that
the first
nice.
Time a few weeks ago.
A few weeks ago.
And not bad. Not bad little spot. Too bad they don't have an adequate hockey rink, but what are you going to do?
Yeah. That would be a great frozen site.
Yeah, it really would. It really would. You can't really venture any place outside of the Inner Harbor, as far as I know, but... Maybe I'm making blanks.
Well, there's...
somebody get
tackled. There's no reason
somebody
to venture outside.
Somebody get tackled. What was that?
No.
Wow. I'm okay. Check yourself. Everything's all right.
Did you fall down the stairs?
No, I'm good.
No,
I'm good.
All right. Just making sure.
I hit the microphone.
Oh, I was going to say the...
Apologize.
I thought we were getting interference again from Power 103.
No.
I watched a few episodes of The Wire on HBO. That dampened my enthusiasm about going to Baltimore. I don't know why. Paint a rosy picture of...
Yeah.
Life in the gritty inner city.
Well, next year we go to Detroit, so.
Yes, we do.
So buck up, because Baltimore makes Detroit.
Detroit makes Baltimore look like Honolulu.
Dubai.
Yeah.
Honolulu.
I was in Detroit this summer. I had a nice time there.
I like it there.
I don't. I hate it. Well, maybe hate is too strong a word.
Well, so I got to ask you this, and this is from an email, but you don't like Florida? Man, who doesn't like Florida?
Me.
Boston
wow.
does not like Florida.
Do not like
Boston's
Florida.
Boston's anti-Florida. I was stunned. I love Florida.
I do not.
If you like dinner at 3 in the afternoon, it's good.
Yeah, at Old Country Buffet.
Hey, I have retired parents now who live in Arizona in the winter. I called them the other day and said, what are you doing? So we're just sitting down to dinner, and I looked at my watch and did the calculation. I'm thinking, where they are, it's 10 to 5. God bless them.
There you go.
I don't know what it is about.
I don't like that it rains every day.
I don't like that. There's just something about Florida, and I can't say that I've been, you know, everywhere in Florida, and certainly there are some parts of it that are very nice, you know. But that said, it's just not my place. Let's just put it that way.
Fair enough.
It
gives you the creeps.
I don't like the weather, for starters. I hate humidity. So I don't like the weather. It just seems like it's a carny breeding ground. That's my big problem. It's like this America is this big strainer, and all the chaff settles down into America's wang.
Florida. I am excited for the Frozen in Tampa.
Yeah, I am too.
To
I think Tampa's a pretty nice city.
I only have to wait 4 more years, but
we'll get a warm welcome now.
Yeah. roll out the Tilt-A-Whirl for us.
Hey, what's the Itch podcast without unsupported generalizations?
And jingoism. I should have announced at the beginning of the podcast that I would be playing the role of Rook Howe.
Man, good times.
But nah, I just don't like Florida.
It is a haven for strip malls.
I had personal turmoil, anguish, mental anguish over the last 72 hours that I finally relieved today. Which
really?
Was whether or not I should attend the Michigan State football game in Orlando or not attend it and go to a friend's wedding on New Year's Eve. And I decided on going to the wedding.
Where's the wedding?
Rochester, New York. Is there a bowl game there? Yeah. Toronto has one.
It's true. Home of the Bills.
How about those Buffalo Bulls, by the way? I watched that.
UB.
The other night.
They're good at picking the ball up off the ground and running the other way.
Yeah.
Man. That coach is going to get a big-time job very soon. Turner Gill.
Syracuse, perhaps?
I don't think Syracuse is going to get him.
They're going to get Skip Holtz?
They're going to get Skip, yeah.
Nice.
It looks like it. It's coming together. It's coming
Turner
together.
Gill was a quarterback at, like, Nebraska, wasn't he?
He was.
And then starting the CFL. I remember Turner Gill.
Well, yeah. You've got a nice little program there.
Yes, he does.
I, you know what? I don't care if you're playing Central Michigan and Eastern Michigan and Northwestern Michigan and whatever else. Winning 8 games in college football is hard to do. So, good for him. Good for the Bulls.
Yeah.
Good for them.
Kudos.
Speaking of Frozen Four sites.
Speaking of Michigan State football.
Let's get back to Buffalo.
No.
I'm just saying.
No. No.
Just saying. Great rank.
Yeah, that's about it.
Never mind.
Speaking of Michigan
State. This is a point of disagreement because, you know, I had a good time in Buffalo, but it's not a place I'm hankering to get back to anytime soon.
Right.
I guess kind of like Detroit. I had a nice time in Detroit this summer, if I had my choice. I don't know that I'd visit there a lot, but there we go.
Yeah. The frozen sites, I mean, St. Louis, I don't care. Denver, whatever.
How dare you?
St. Paul was okay. Columbus was not really okay at all.
Yeah, I wasn't a big
fan. If they had that at the downtown rink, I think I would have liked it better.
Yeah,
Columbus
had
good weather.
Well, yeah, of course. But they didn't open the roof for those games, though. Boston.
Anyway, bus.
Boston.
Boston's good. Buffalo's good.
He's trying to throw Buffalo in there.
It was good. It's good hockey.
Yeah, I mean,
Joe, you're a neutral observer. You've never lived here. What did you think of St. Paul, honestly? Do you like St. Paul or St. Paul?
That was pre-Inch. So let's start there. That Frozen Four was pre-Inch. So I was there in a spectator capacity. Not even
you were a friend of college hockey back then.
I was a friend of college hockey that weekend. Now I'm just a measly podcast host. The rink was amazing. I mean, amazing. That facility is top-notch.
They did it right when they built that rink, that's for sure.
Yeah. So that was my impression of St. Paul, first off. I liked that the home team won. You know, I enjoyed the fact that there were 19,000 Gopher fans there that, you know, hadn't won a national championship. And they're, you know, let's be honest, their most important, you know, sport at the school. Wrestling, football, whatever. But I enjoyed that element of it. So from the Frozen Four standpoint, those are my recollections. Nightlife-wise, you know, there was stuff to do. It's a clean city. It seemed pretty navigable. Bridges didn't fall down. I was down. That was good.
It's not when you were there.
That's Minneapolis. That's Minneapolis.
So, I mean, visited St. Thomas University, University of St. Thomas. That was nice.
And surrounding areas.
So yeah, it was. I thought it was fine. Again, Jess, I'd come back.
It's a city. It's a city of neighborhoods, really.
Which is good.
Which is good.
Yeah.
But you got to get away of the down. I think you have to get away from the downtown to kind of experience what it's all about.
Yeah, and you know, how do you judge? You know, you can't judge a city. We're there for basically a 72-hour hockey and social, you know, smorgasbord.
You can't judge a whole city. You can't judge a whole city based on how little we see of it and how little we're there. And yet we do judge them, don't we?
And harshly.
We don't let that small sample stand in our way of passing judgment.
Nope.
Yeah.
And God bless us.
We should.
So there's your answer. Any other travel tips for podcast deterioration?
We should note that any opinions that you hear on regarding cities or locales or have a plus or minus error of probably about 75%. So
yeah,
it could be completely off base.
I love East St. Louis.
As Jess reminded me the other day, we can make these statements because we have a podcast and you don't.
Well, there you go.
So
I was gonna make a point about Michigan State football. When they sign a wide receiver to a national letter of intent, are they immediately put into a diversion program?
Yeah, we're good. Good.
I just saw that Mark Ingram didn't show up for federal prison today. He bounced some checks or something.
Yeah.
Of course, Plaxico winged himself.
Yep.
Charles Rogers is
up to no good.
No, he was in court this week, earlier this week.
Good.
He's in a diversion program. I don't know where Andre Rison is.
Burning somebody's house down.
No, that was his house got burnt down by.
Wow, revenge is the sweetest feeling in the world.
It was salt and pepper, wasn't it? No.
No.
Lisa Left Eye Lopez.
His marquee TLC burned his house down.
The late Lisa Left Eye Lopez, by the way.
That is true. Thoughts and prayers.
Met an untimely demise a few years later.
Maybe that's what happened, Andre Rison.
No. If anybody knows where he is.
Well, those are all the receivers who could actually catch the ball.
If he's a podcast listener, drop us an email.
Yeah, Andre Rison, please write us at inch@insidecollege.com.
You're his parole officer. Give us a shout.
Yeah, we do our best. We do our best. As long as we keep the wine coolers away from our starting quarterback, we'll be fine.
We've recently... Oh, man.
We'll be fine.
Wine coolers. Do they still make those?
Ask Casey, Jimmy Clausen.
Bartles and James are huge sellers in Ascot, Michigan.
Those giant Sun Country 2 liters.
Oh.
All you need are a couple of those and a party ball. And
what was the one that came in a box? You got the big box of Matilda Bay. That was it. Oh, my.
Is she related to Florence, Alabama?
We just came full circle, I believe.
I think we did. And with that, we will sign off on another Inside College Hockey podcast. Thank you for listening. Happy holidays to everyone out there. And enjoy the games this weekend at your local rinks.